Hello, I am Greg Livingston, and I am here tonight with the developers of Hubots. Please introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Michael Young. I'm the project lead.
I'm Erica Schumacher, and I am the art lead.
And I'm Ted Cordell, and I'm the game designer and lead programmer.
All right, nice to meet you all. And
Nice to meet you too.
we are here to discuss Hubots, a puzzle game for, I believe, Android. Are there any other devices it's out on?
Oh, there's a lot. There's Android, we're planning on iOS, Windows Phone, PC, Mac, both those have demos up. Possibly Linux, now that Unity is starting to support Linux publishing a lot more with version 5.
Okay. Unity's actually really powerful that way, isn't it?
Yeah. It's amazing like how fast they've progressed over like a couple of years, but I'm not complaining.
So first I wanted to get at progression in Hubots, and I wanted to ask, how did you ramp up the complexity of stages in Hubots from one stage to the next?
Oh sure. Chad would be really good at handling that since he was designed most of the game's game design. Chad?
Yeah, so I like to think about the entire game as just one big long thought process. So you kind of start out, you don't know anything, so the levels are kind of designed around leading people's expectations towards, rather having them act on instinct. So we make the things we want them to click on, like kind of we point them out and kind of make them click on it so they know how to like build robots, how to move them around, the special quirks of them moving around. So the beginning levels just kind of teach you those things without actually explaining them. And then as they start to turn into actual puzzles, it kind of messes with those expectations more. So it'll kind of lead you to do one thing, and then the puzzle after it will kind of take what you learned from that previous puzzle and either put a twist on it or kind of mess with your expectations and force you to think more outside the box, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. I guess just for clarification, is that to say in those introductory puzzles, does the player have any chance for failure in those opening puzzles?
There really isn't any failure in the game. I mean, really the only failure state is giving up, because the game's all about just solving those puzzles. There's no losing. You can undo moves, you can restart the level and try again if you want. You have no like limit on lives. It's all just about thinking it through. So I guess the failure state would just be, if you don't figure it out, then you might give up. That's really all it is.
Okay. So it sounds like consequences are pretty light for each individual move you make. Are you able, like,
Right.
you're able to undo back all the way back to the beginning? Okay.
Yeah, if you make a move you don't want it, you can just undo that move, because the levels do get pretty complex. So if you just accidentally put a block in the wrong place or something, we don't make you restart the entire level.
Okay. So it sounded like you also introduced patterns and then sort of played on those patterns and built them into puzzles by reversing what players had come to expect. Okay.
Yeah, so that kind of goes off what I was saying before about kind of using their expectations against them. So they might solve it one way, and then we'll change the color. We'll like change the color of one block or something, and they'll immediately assume, since the puzzle looks so similar, they'll try to solve it the same way, and that doesn't work. But then they'll be so like stuck in that mindset of solving that first puzzle, it really forces them to like kind of expand their mind and think outside of the box, and that makes it really satisfying to play when they finally, solve that twist.
So would you count those as red herrings or tricks, like trying to throw the player off?
I guess a little bit.
Okay. I also wanted to ask, how many steps ahead do players typically plan? You've demoed this game at Gamescape. I was wondering if any of you had noticed how players tend to play.
It's a Everybody seems to have a different play style. I mean, you can, the game is definitely designed so that you can think through the entire puzzle before actually executing any of the moves. But some people do like to experiment and kind of go step by step and see what they can figure out. Sometimes that, just the way the level is designed, that doesn't quite work out because they back themselves into a corner. It kind of requires some planning, but it's definitely, either way is definitely a valid way of playing the game.
So when you say it's designed so that you can plan it out from the beginning, how is that?
It's just how to explain it.
So I mean, each stage only has one or two solutions, so there's a way to get there. It's just up to the players to figure it out. So people can plan their way to that path to the goal, but they can also figure it out by just like messing around, being like, oh, I wonder what this does, and then they'll figure it out.
Yeah, every action in the game is predetermined. Like there's nothing random about the game. Every move you make, every specific move will have the same specific outcome. So you can theoretically sit there and like plan out the moves before you actually execute them. So the game's definitely a lot more about the thought process than actually executing it in game.
So it's almost like you see the puzzle on screen and you can look at each element and imagine this is what's going to happen when I, you know, hit the wall here. This is what my option will be, so on and so forth.
Right.
Okay.
And but yeah, there is also the more experimental way of playing, which is actually more helpful in like the tutorial stages, where you don't know the outcomes yet because you haven't learned the game mechanics. So that's a lot more of a step-by-step process than thinking out the entire thing straight through.
Okay.
So once you get an idea of what each element in the game does, it becomes a lot easier to see the whole picture of the level and figure out, you know, how do I get to point A, to point B, to point C, to the goal?
Right.
So there's like a network of complexities based on each of the different elements.
Yeah, pretty much.
What are, I think I played all the way through the demo and I saw being able to place blocks and being able to place other robots. What are some of the other elements that players will encounter as the game develops?
So there are basically these buttons that if a bot that matches its color stands on it, then they're special blocks. Like the buttons will have a number on it, and any block with that number on it will deactivate. So it's kind of like a pressure plate door system kind of thing, where you stand a bot on it and it'll deactivate the door. But the color matching thing plays into account because the blocks have colors and the buttons have colors too. There are also push blocks that you'll encounter. So if a bot runs into the push block, then the block will push. But if the bot doesn't match the push block's color, it'll just stay there and act like a normal wall. And then there's also, closer to the end of the game, there are color mixers. So you kind of send two bots. You'll send in like a red bot and an orange bot, and it'll combine them in, or a red bot and a yellow bot, sorry, and it'll combine them into an orange bot. So it kind of like plays into that, the color mixing you learned in like first grade.
Yeah, it sounds like the aesthetics do a large part of communicating what you can do with puzzles.
Right.
Just a more general question about game development. Do team roles tend to bleed together, or do you generally find that you're more focused on your individual task without really commenting on what the game as a whole is becoming?
Do you mind if I handle this, Sam?
Yeah, sure.
From my perspective as like managing, because like when I came on, I was actually known more as like a really great programmer. I wasn't like a star mad scientist kind of programmer. And at first, it seemed like that was what I was going to do, just code. But it turned out that each of us had like really specialized really well. Like Cad knew everything about how the character should move, about how the block should behave. And he just understood the gameplay very naturally. And so he was able to work on the gameplay really well and fit into that. Erica was really amazing with the art, but of course, since we don't really have like a program to mix programming directly with art, she didn't know much about coding. So she just handled just mainly the visual design. And she might ask him, like, oh, how should this bot move to inform how she would do the tile designs or how she would do transitions between different animation states. And same thing with Jasmine, because Jasmine had to actually do the actual frame-by-frame animations on top of that. So each of us had like a niche that we would focus on. But at the same time, each of us had to then communicate back with each other and ask, oh, how are you doing this? Why do you want to have this element executed in this fashion? So we were doing it, each of our individual tasks, by like we had our own, we basically owned our feature, but we had to do it with the information of the rest of the project behind it. We had to, like, each of our assistants had to be very much informed by what each of the other specialists was doing.
And if I can say something too, I think some of the jobs have bleeded. Like, sort of, I've personally worked on a lot of things. Like, I've done the programming and the design and the music and sound, and I've also helped kind of animate a few things, like a few of the simpler things, like the backgrounds, which people don't really notice, but it's good. But I feel like that's sort of a byproduct of having such a small team, since we only really have four people. On a bigger team, the roles would probably be a lot more concrete, but I mean, since there are only four of us, then usually we just kind of try to get done what needs to be done, given we have the skill set to do so.
With a four-person team, it's really easy to communicate and say, I need this image to have this size so that it communicates this hitbox or something like that.
Sort of, yes. It's very organic. Like, after a while, you don't even think to ask those questions. Like, you just know, like, oh, we operate at this DPI, so I need this type of image size. We use we're tile-based, so we should have square aspect ratio for the textures. And so, like, eventually, like, after a couple months in, like, it wasn't, like, things like specific details like that. Sometimes it was more like, oh, like, which colors do you want me to pick? Do you want it to be, like, more this kind of purple, that kind of purple? They became, like, very qualitative. And the quantitative stuff, like, they come up, like, once, then we'd get it. Like, we'd all collaborate together and figure, like, oh, so this is the type of, like, this is the number, this is the value that we need. Then it would just never come up again because, like, we basically knew. I think if we had, like, more people on the team, like, we would need a lot more documentation. But, like, yeah, this was, like, the sweet spot where people could just remember the details that they needed to know. And I think we have some documentation, right, Dad? But there,
yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, but, like, not much. Like, just, like, checkboxes, like, oh, what feature do you need? And otherwise, like, it was very instinctive. It was very interesting.
Okay. I was also curious, so who's mainly responsible for the actual puzzle design and who is responsible for the concept of the elements? And I was wondering if that was more or less the same role.
That was mostly me. Basically, we're part of a game development club at our school at UMBC. And every year that game development club has kind of like a session where everyone pitches ideas for games they want to make. And then the following weekend, we have a 48-hour game jam where we basically prototype our ideas that we pitch this past weekend and then present them to the club at the end and see what people like and they vote on what they want to keep doing. But basically, Hubots was part of that process, so I had the original idea, and I pitched it to the club, and originally it was just me and Jasmine, who's not here, working on the original prototype and the game jam. So that's when I came up with a lot of, like, the gameplay mechanic ideas and some of the level design, and it was when I really got to start thinking about the game and, like, how the different game mechanics could play together and do interesting things. Then we kind of formed our full team later on after that.
It was a beast during that game jam, though. Basically, yeah. That entire game was basically done in those 48 hours, except for I think, color changes in doors. Color changers, pressure plate doors, those were pretty much the main features that weren't in the 48-hour demo that he made.
Yeah, it was a fun game jam. It wasn't, like, done. There was a lot of polish missing. It didn't have any, like, it was definitely very playable. It was kind of like, if you put the Game Jam demo and, like, the demo we showed at Gamescape, the biggest differences would be, like, more final art and, like, an actual menu. But, like, it was definitely playable. It was...
Yeah, it looked polished.
It went out to show what it could do, but it was not like production level.
Okay.
A lot of like polish and a few more features to add and stuff.
So, Mike and Erica, I was wondering, given that, what drew you to HuBots?
Well, before Tad made HuBots, he made a lot of, like, really interesting stuff. Like, the game he made the year before that was, you know, Smash Brothers, right?
Yeah.
So, basically, imagine Smash Brothers, except you have fully simulated skeletons, right?
Okay.
Like, physically simulated skeletons.
Like, quack.
So, like, if you do a punch command, it actually triggers the muscles that actually push the fist forward. And if you want to jump, it actually triggers all the muscles all throughout the body to fully coordinate that jump that you do on your feet to actually push your character up. And on top of that, he simulated actually being able to detach parts of the skeleton. So you could punch a guy's, like, arm off,
ugh,
and his arm was flying, like, into space. And if a guy, and if you got hit in the spine and, like, your spine broke, you wouldn't actually die. But, like, you couldn't actually, like, coordinate your guy, so you'd be flapping around, like, this magic carpet. Kind of. And, I mean, but it wasn't, like, gore or anything. Like, you guys played, like, you basically played, like, a bunch of, like, Jack Skellington type of guys. So, there was, like, there's no blood or anything, but just, like, you had, like, bullets flying around. Like, well, no, magic song notes flying around, and you had, like, bones flying all over the place. You could actually, like, if I remember, like, you, like, if you threw your arm right when it got detached, you could hit a guy in the face with it and knock his head off. He just...
You could also, like, self-destruct, so if you were basically a lump on the ground and you could barely move, if someone came to finish you off, you could hit a button, self-destruct, and, like, try to take them down with you.
That thing was really deadly, too. Like, if you were next to a guy when the self-destruct went off, like, you were pretty much done. And so, yeah, like, his ideas were always, like, they were really clean. They were really, really, like, gameplay really polished, and they had a lot of, like, emergence to them. There were so many ways that you could really play a game that Tad made.
Simple ideas, like, that had a lot of consequences that could flow out of them easily.
Yes. It was interesting. Like, no two ways you play the game really felt the same. Even, like, in a game like HuBots, like, really, like, everything's deterministic. It, like, when you were playing it, like, it felt like you could actually approach it different ways. It always felt, like, interesting. And that wasn't... And, I mean, of course, since we're students, that's not the kind of feeling that you get in a lot of designers. So I knew beforehand, like, oh, yeah, like, he's an interesting designer. And then the year that he made HuBots, I was actually entering a Microsoft competition called the Imagine Cup. And we needed a compelling idea. At the time, like, we were talking with our mentor, we wanted something that wasn't, like, really violent or anything. But we also wanted something that was, like, actually interesting. We couldn't just have, like, an artsy game about the consequences of life. Or we'd get...
You could. Out, like,
so, and then Tad, like, did his game in 48 hours. Really fun puzzle game that was, like, just tricky enough to be compelling, but not so tricky that it would disinterest people who thought, like, oh, I need to be a genius to play this game. And I knew Tad pretty well. Tad was a cool guy. He was not, like, a huge jerk. And so I called him up and said, like, hey, do you want to maybe do this game, this competition? We can have some teriyaki chicken or whatever. And, and then after that, boom, we came together as a team.
Nice. And Erica, what drew you to the project?
Well, I kind of tagged along with Michael because... I think initially I was brought onto Michael's team for the Microsoft competition.
Yeah.
But then the game that we were working on didn't really pan out, so we were looking to, like, get a different team. And then we found Tad's game. And personally, I joined HuBots because I love the game. Like, I when I saw it, I'm like, yes, this is a playable game. I would love to play this and challenge my brain and just do all these puzzles and get angry. So I kind of jumped in because, well, I just liked the system itself because it's clean, it's simple, but it's so deceptively complex when all of the little mechanics come together. So, I mean, I just love it.
Yeah, the game might actually be, like, Turing complete. We don't... Like, right? To go off on a tangent, we have a level editor in the game, and, like, we gave it to some of our friends, and he was like, hey, I made, like, digital logic circuits in your game without programming anything. And we were like, what? Like, So, like, theoretically, basically the point is, theoretically, if we allowed you to zoom out far enough in the level editor and we, like, tweaked a couple things to let you make more of, like, the same type of object we already have in the game, you could theoretically, like, build a computer in our level editor. But I mean, like, I mean, we have restrictions in place because that would take a lot of time and, like, probably melt your own computer. But, I mean, just, like, yeah, the gameplay is definitely very emergent. Like, you can do things in it that we didn't really expect.
That's because Tad's a good designer.
I didn't intend for this to happen. Like, you can build a computer in HuBots. That's cool. I totally didn't intend for that.
Have you heard of the guys who programmed Pong in the Super Mario World?
Yes. That was, when I saw that, that blew my mind.
Have any of you, like, personally messed around with the stage creator, or has it mostly just been Tad creating stages?
Well, I drew a duck in it once. I'm not Yeah, like, it's funny, like, I'm pretty good at, like, managing, but I'm not very good at puzzles. I've made it, like, I will make, like, a level or two, like, there's, each of us made a level for the credits, but I'm definitely more of a, like, a run around and sort of, like, improvise kind of person. I think, Erica, you made a couple levels, right?
No, I think that's Jasmine. Jasmine made some very interesting levels, for lack of better words.
Yeah, Jasmine's are pretty cool levels. Like, I was actually bugging each of them to, like, make a level. I was like, okay, I made all the levels, but, like, each of the four of us should make, like, a special credits puzzle that, like, you get at the end, where it's just, like, each of the team members made a level. Like, that's cool. And, like, Jasmine actually went on and made a few more. And, like, because we also, along with the level editor, we also have, like, a level sharing system, kind of like Little Big Planet, where you, like, make your level and then you can publish it online. And then there's, like, a browser in game. You can, like, download other people's levels and play them all and stuff.
Nice.
So Jasmine was helping me test that, and she was making levels, and they're actually really... I just, like, went on one day, and I saw new levels made by her, and I was like, oh, I guess I'll try them out. And I was stuck on them for, like... One of her levels I was stuck on for, like, 40 minutes. Like, I was considering, like, messaging her and being like, is your level actually possible? But I was like, is between that or, like, keeping my pride and, like, trying to figure it out on my own.
That's,
Yeah, they were definitely, they were possible, and I beat them, and it was awesome.
That's a little crazy to consider, like, stumping the person responsible for the game's design.
Yeah, like, it was really interesting, too, because since I made, so, like, all of the levels, I didn't actually have a chance to see how the game was, like, how it actually was to play. So I was never able to solve any of the puzzles since I'd already made them. So,
right, I was about to ask, like, which of you is best at the game, but then I realized, well, if you already know the solutions, that's kind of a...
Yeah, so playing Jasmine's level definitely got me hyped about releasing the game and, like, being able to play what other people create. Part of it's when the game releases, I'll finally be able to play it, too.
Nice. So, one last question, just a conceptual question I like to run by everybody individually. Mike, when it comes to game design, not necessarily HuBots, but just how you think on a more philosophical, abstract level... When it comes to game design, which is more important? The game in itself? The intention of the developer? Or the experience of the player?
Well, we're trying to make money off our games. And in order to do that, you need customers. And as I always used to say, as my peepaw always used to say, that customer's always right. So, in my opinion, yeah, like, when we're making games for sale like we are now, like, it has to be the customer experience. That's pretty much it. Like, that's the final arbiter. Although, like, we think really hard about, like, oh, like, what's our vision? Like, how do we want people to see this? But in the end, people will play and they'll say, like, oh, I liked it or I didn't like it. And if they did like it, like, yeah, we need to work more like that. If they didn't like it, we have to listen to what they say. Otherwise, like, why are we selling it? We should, I mean, make it for free and release it if we don't want to listen to them.
Yeah, that makes sense. Erica, when it comes to game design, which is more important?
I'm kind of on the same vein, but more so because I like playing games. So someone else, the player, also likes playing games. So if I was the player, I'd want a game that is fun and I enjoy. So the player experience is definitely, I think, the most important. Although, I mean, I like game mechanics that are practical. So if that can tie in to the user experience, then that's probably the best.
How do you mean practical?
Like where the game itself plays, like even if it was, say, like a text game. If it was a text game with like no visuals, no nothing, and it still played as an interesting game mechanic, I think that would be like great. Because you can build off of that. Huh. And that's where you get into, like, user experience.
That's an interesting way to phrase it. Okay. And, Tad, when it comes to game design, which is more important?
So you said the idea, the developer's intentions, or the user experience?
Or the game in itself, but yeah.
Yeah, the game. So, I mean, they all kind of go hand in hand. Like, when you're making the game, you're making what you want to make. So that's kind of like the game itself and the developer's intentions. But like Michael and Erica said, user feedback is king. So the developer's intentions, if you want people to be feeling or like having a certain experience, then it's your job to design the game around that and make sure that when people play it, they're getting that experience, if that makes sense. So if you're like watching people play your game and they're doing it completely wrong, then that's kind of your fault as the designer. Like you, I mean, but if they're enjoying it, then it's kind of up to you whether to change the game to like match your intentions, but also possibly make it less fun, or to just keep it the way it is and kind of have them keep them happy. So it's, I mean, yeah, they all kind of go hand in hand.
So let me flip that on its head. When you play a game, do you ever think about what the developer intended? Am I playing it their way?
I actually have gotten to the point where, like, I can... I mean, I'm also a speedrunner, so I like to think outside the box when I'm playing games. Like, I could totally, like, skip this cutscene or something, like... Or, like, I could, like, sequence break or whatever. But usually the first time I'm playing games, I actually like to keep in mind what the developer is intending. Like, I can... usually try to predict what they're intending for me to do, because I'm assuming that's the best experience I'm going to get. If I kind of follow what they're trying to make me do, then I feel like that's definitely going to allow me to enjoy the game more, because, I mean, as a developer, that's what I'm trying to do. Like, if I'm trying to get the player to do something, then that's because that's probably for a good reason. So when I'm playing games, I like to try to think from a developer mindset and see what they're trying to, like, egg me on to do.
Yeah, just in a, I guess, in a practical sense, going off the beaten path, the developer will have less money to spend on QA, so you're more likely to get into sticky situations that way.
Yeah, right. Like, I try to avoid those until the second playthrough, then it's just like, I want to break this game.
It's brutal.
All right, well, thank you for joining me to talk about Hubots. Is there anything you guys wanted to bring up?
I can't think of anything. Do you guys have any questions?
Greenlight.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We're on Steam Greenlight, yeah.
Okay.
Actually, yes, that's definitely one thing. We have the Greenlight currently up under Hubots, of course.
And Hubots.com.
Hubots, Huebots, or Huebots, or Huebots.
As some people call it.
Everyone has their own way of pronouncing it, but Huebots. And if you guys would want to vote yes, that would be really awesome for us. This is the first game, I think, that's come out of UMBC's Games Developers Club as a commercial game.
Oh, so nice.
Very excited about that.
Glad to hear.
Very thankful for your time. So, thank you.